Hi, everybody. This is Mel.
And this is Jill.
And this is Mel and Jill Geek Out. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Mel.
How's it going?
Not too bad.
We had a little bit of a total eclipse of the heart today.
We did. Did you get to see it?
I did not go outside because it is overcast here today. And I do, in fact, live in the path of totality. But it was pretty gloomy out. But yeah. It did get dark. It was like full on like nighttime outside for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I was not in the path of totality. I did go outside. I wasn't planning to because it was cloudy. And I was like, I won't see anything. Plus, I don't have glasses. So there's that. But I stepped outside. My coworker told me, hey, you know, it's actually kind of darker out here. Come take a look. And while we were standing out there, someone in our parking lot said, hey, I have an extra pair of glasses. And it was, I would not have expected to see anything, but we put the glasses on and you could see it crystal clear. And I was actually able to take a pretty good picture of it.
You did. You did. Every single one of my coworkers took pictures. I'm sorry. Yeah. Rosie is crying because the wind blew. I don't know. I don't have answers for these things. Maybe someday she'll wear one of those collars like Doug from Up, but
yeah,
that day is not today. Yeah, all my coworkers were taking pictures. We moved a bunch of meetings to make this happen. And I'm like, guys, like it's cool. Don't get me wrong. It's cool. But I think I just got burnt out by like the complete overreaction of everyone, like everyone had to it. Like,
yeah.
My entire company worked from home today because they didn't want anybody on the roads because there are a lot of people who came into town for it because we're in the path of totality and like all of this stuff. And I'm like, guys, it is like really not that serious.
I mean, I can't remember. I think I watched the last one.
Yeah, I've watched many like many of these have occurred before in my lifetime. Many more will occur.
Yeah. This is the first time I was able to like fully watch it and then snap a picture. So I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah. There's a camera company, like a local camera company, and they set up special cameras that did like a time lapse of it.
Ooh.
So that was pretty cool.
That's very cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw something literally right before I walked outside that said NASA did not recommend using your phone to look. And I was like, I wonder why. So I did put the cover over my phone. I don't know if that helps, but I did put it over my camera lens because I didn't just snap it with the phone. But yeah. I think that's why I was able to see it so clearly in the picture.
Yes. You are not the only one who played that trick.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure I'm not, but I was like, I wonder if that's real. I didn't want to chance it. So,
yeah, I don't know. There's like, for some reason I got served a lot of TikToks about like how in a lot of cultures there are like superstitions and beliefs that like pregnant women shouldn't go outside during a total eclipse because like bad juju will happen. Like
this, that kind of stuff like only appeared on my feed after the eclipse.
Not helpful.
No. And I was like, what are people talking about? Like having, you know, full breakdowns. I'm like, oh, for what? I'm so confused.
There's just a bunch of cultures that have different beliefs and it's like a, like lots of different ones. Some are like, if you have to go outside, wear red or wear a safety pin in your clothes. Like, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. My coworker said that they saw that the world was going to end for X whatever reason. And I was like, you know, I was like, I've been through a few of those already, at least three. Mm-hmm. So I think my odds are good.
Y2K 2012.
Yes. We're good. There's another one, I swear.
Yeah.
It was 2022, wasn't it? Like the whole two, all the twos?
I don't know. 2020, I feel like, is the real one.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I did see somebody on TikTok jokingly say that they were going to buy a bunch of blow up dolls and inflate them with helium and then release them during the eclipse to freak a bunch of people out. Like that it would was be the funny. Rapture.
That would be funny.
It would be funny. It would be terrible for the environment, though.
This is true.
But imagine like walking funny. Through the woods and you just see a deflated, punctured, like inflatable human.
Yeah. That's creepy.
Yeah.
Not at
it,
all.
I wouldn't vote for it.
No. So I have found myself in a not predicament, but like weird area. I don't know what to describe it as.
Okay. Are you in like a reading slump now that you finished Throne of Glass?
No. It took me, well, yes and no. It took me forever to figure out what I wanted to read next.
Fair. It is challenging.
Yeah. Well, I had to read Crescent City.
You did.
So I finished that up. So post Crescent City, I was like, well, shit, now I don't know what to read.
You have the SJM hangover.
Yeah, well, yes and no, because I would love to have dived into another series. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know which one I wanted to start with. That's the problem. I have several that I wanted to get into, but I was like, meh. So I picked one that was on Kindle Unlimited because they have their little challenges, and I am bound and determined to get every fucking one of them this quarter.
You are.
I got every single one last time except for the full month. So I'm going to get it. I'm going for a three-peat. So
do it.
We'll see. Anyway, not the point. One of them is you have to pick a Kindle book, and I picked Evelyn Hugo because I was like, it's a one-off until I can figure out which thing. So I read it in like 2 days and have repeated that pattern since. I've now started a new series, the Broken Bonds or something like that.
I'm not familiar.
Okay.
But I'm sure it's wonderful.
Yeah. I don't care so much about the title. Just read the book. But but it's good so far. But I've been like, honestly, I've been cranking them out every like 2 days. And it's weird. It makes me hence the dilemma. Like I've been going through them quicker. So I'm having to decide again what mm-hmm. I'm going to read. But it's weird because it took me so long to get through all of SJM, but also the books are like 1,000 fucking pages. So these 300 and 400 page books are just like so quick, and they're not nearly as detailed as SJM. So it's like I don't have to put the same amount of effort into it. So I'm able to listen at work while I'm, you know, doing paperwork and shit.
Yeah. When you do mindless tasks.
Yes. So it's like very much I'm reading at a way faster pace than I'm used to.
Yeah. SJM broke you a little bit. She's known to do that.
I guess.
With her 1,000 page books. I feel like this is why I have a TBR jar, so that I don't have to make these decisions. But right now I'm just kind of a little bit, I'm not loving my TBR jar right now because I put all of the books I have not read yet that are in my physical library into it. And I pulled The Light of Days, which was a great read. Don't get me wrong. But for those of you who don't know, it's about Jewish female resistance fighters in the ghettos during World War II.
Oh,
really interesting read.
Mm-hmm.
Really heavy.
Yeah.
The the next book, and mind you, I don't own that many like nonfiction books that I have not read.
Uh-huh.
I used to be a heavy nonfiction reader. I only have like a handful that I have not read. Out of all of the books you think I would have pulled, I don't know what the odds were. Not favorable. After reading a book about Jewish female resistance fighters, I pulled a book that I'm not shitting you is called Hitler's Henchmen, because I'm very fascinated by that time in history and like the sociology of how does somebody like Hitler get into power and how does a society allow this to happen and all that stuff. So that is the next book I pulled on my TBR jar.
I would have put that right back in. Put it right back in and be like, nope, not funny, and pick another one.
Fair. So I cheated a little bit. So I like to have a physical book for sure, sometimes a Kindle book, and then an audiobook that I'm listening to, like doing all of those things simultaneously. And they're all typically different books. So I cheated and I got Love Theoretically on Spotify.
Okay.
So I didn't even use an Audible credit for it. So it's good. It's not, I think this might be my last Allie Hazelwood. Like, she just doesn't do it for me. There's too much time spending, like, I get, like, science, academia is very, can be very misogynistic, but, like, that is the major plot point in all three of the books by her that I have read, is that these women have such unfair like disadvantages because they are women mm-hmm. in academia. And I'm just like, I get it. I'm not questioning that it's a real thing. I need, if I'm going to read a romance novel, I need it to be a little fluffier.
Yeah, you like them fluffy.
The point to me of a romance novel is to be a little bit, if I'm reading a rom-com, I want it to be fluffy. I want to be giggling and kicking my feet and just like feeling the feels.
We are on such opposite ends of the spectrum. It's not even funny.
This is only for romance novels, which you don't read to begin with.
No.
So when I'm looking at a romance novel, that is what I'm hoping for. Like, I don't really want to question like misogyny and feminism. And
yeah,
I hate the miscommunication trope. And there's a lot of that going on right now because every single one of Allie Hazelwood female main characters loves to make assumptions and illogical deductions and think that they're smart.
That's
annoying. I literally can't stand it. So it's like that or my Hitler book. And every time I pick that up, I fall asleep.
Yeah. Put the book back.
Put the book back.
Yeah.
Try again.
Yes. Because it's you're not taking it. You're not DNFing it. You're just saying like, I am not in the place for this right now.
Yeah.
The TBR jar is just a method of choosing. It's not a commitment.
See, that's my problem. I feel like it's a commitment.
Okay, well, this is your exception. Because there's an exception to every rule.
You're giving me a reprieve?
Yes. Please.
Don't try again later.
God, don't punish yourself. Like, why?
It's not even a long book. It's only like 300 pages. But like, every chapter is like 40 pages
long. I know, but like, I feel like sometimes you just get in a book like that. And that, I mean, that was off with her head with me. It took me like a fucking year to read that thing. So, yeah, I feel you. Don't do that. Just put it down and say, I'm going to come back later.
I will come back. Okay.
Yep.
I will pull again from the TBR jar tonight and see what I get.
I double checked the series that I started picking up. Was The Bonds That Tie. So
I believe you.
I had a friend recommend it. I was like, halfway through the book, and then it got good. I mean, it's not like the best thing in the world, but the end, like, good cliffhangers. So I was like, that's enough to keep going. So
enough to keep going.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to dive into today's book? One yes. that we have been just slowly but surely working our way through.
The little engine that could.
Hey, we are doing a fairly in-depth analysis.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Of this book.
I'm not complaining. I'm just teasing.
I was like, I'm not going to lie. I'm not enjoying it as much the second time around as I did the first time around, because I really just want to drop kick Violet most of the time.
Yeah.
She's really annoying. She does get better. I keep saying this every episode. I'm like, she gets better, right? She gets her shit together at some point, right?
Anyways,
so we're going to dive into chapter 40, and I'm going to start out with what I love to do, which is the little snippet at the beginning of the chapter. So it says, his first true action of rebellion was to seek allies. The first was Viscount Takaris of the Poramish province of Krovla. And this is from the Tirish Rebellion of Forbidden History by Colonel Felix Geralt. So Felix is Violet's new, like, signet
teacher.
Professor.
Yeah.
It's nice to see where he lies. He's a history guy. I feel like these two might get along really well.
Yes, I
eventually.
Agree.
So it starts out and they're like out and, you know, Zayden goes off to do the thing he does every day, doing his patrols and things. And Violet goes and meets with Felix to start training. And he mm-hmm. has a lot of critiques of Carr. He's like, he pretty much tells Violet that Carr was an absolutely terrible professor. All he did was teach her quantity over quality.
Yeah.
And she has no actual control. So one of the things he says, which I think is very fascinating, is you just might wield the most devastating signet on the continent, but you know nothing about it. Nothing about the energies that it draws. Instead of shooting your power like an arrow, precise and measured, you're just heaving it around like boiling oil, hoping to hit something. And lightning comes from the sky or the ground, depending on the storm. So why not your hands? Because he asked her to shoot it out of her hands. She's like, that's not how that fucking works.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to see how ignorant Violet is to her own signet. She has spent no time educating herself about like electricity or power. She ain't got a fucking clue.
It's kind of astonishing, really.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't really feel like Violet.
Yeah.
Not the character that we were given in Fourth Wing. I feel like
no.
Fourth Wing Violet and Iron Flame Violet are two radically different people.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm not a fan. Because I liked Violet in Fourth
Wing.
She would
have. I feel like Fourth Wing Violet would have been going through everything she'd read about electricity or whatever. Mm-hmm. Lightning. Because she said it like comes from the sky. That's not true.
It's in the air.
Yeah. So.
Unless they have like minimal, because they don't talk about electricity being a thing. So maybe they really don't know that much.
Well, but obviously they do, because Felix said it comes from the ground depending on the storm.
So Felix knows shit because he lives in Tirindor. But I don't feel like the people in Baz Gaeth have spent any fucking time learning these things. And I'll get to some points where I prove that.
I'm sure. I'm sure you will.
So this is a very interesting conversation. So we're going to talk about multiple points. So it continues to go on and he says something interesting, and I really love this like description of her power, and it makes her being like this super powerful being make more sense. He says, "You wield pure power that takes the form of lightning because that is what you're most comfortable shaping it as." Apparently, Carr never taught you that either. So, like, if you wield pure power,
mm-hmm. of course you don't.
That can come out as a lot of different things, not just lightning.
Yeah.
Is she going to be able to, like, force push people? Because I really want that.
Force push?
Yeah, like a Jedi.
Oh. I suppose so.
She just push them all away from her.
I mean, sure.
I'm just saying.
And fry them at the same time.
Push them away and fry them.
There you go.
I'm just saying. I feel like there's a lot of things that could happen. So she continues to prove herself to be not good at wielding her signet, no. which is interesting. And so Carr, because he recognizes she is really bad at this, gives her a conduit. So a conduit, this is, okay, I'm going to pull out a Harry Potter reference. When they described the conduit, all I thought was a Remembrall from yeah. Harry Potter.
Same.
Okay. At least I'm not alone.
It wasn't just you. No, it okay. was same.
That is exactly what I imagined was a Remembrall.
Yeah.
So it's like this glass orb that has Tirish runes like etched into it. And this is why I feel like there's some shit that is going on in Basgaiath that's like sketch, more so than what we already know. He says, after he gives it to her, he's like, yes, runes, wielded power woven over for set purposes, which you know nothing about because Basgaiath doesn't teach Tirish runes, even if the castle is fucking built on them. Guess we'll ask Trissa to teach the class. She's the most patient of the assembly. So we get a little bit more information about runes
mm-hmm.
in this little sentence here. A, the Tirish runes exist in Basgaiath, and it's built on them. So there's something very fundamentally powerful in world about these runes. At another point, he says something about Carr hasn't changed much in the 6 years since I've been gone. So Felix used to be at Basgaiath
mm-hmm.
and has since defected. Does Felix have a dragon? If so, where is that dragon? Curiosity, or is he not a writer and from something else? We don't know. We don't have any of these answers. But I felt like it was a kind of an interesting piece of information to get dropped on us.
I mean, it was definitely nice to get it, but like, I feel like you're probably seeing something I'm not.
I just feel like there's more to this Tirish stuff.
Oh God, yeah.
Than I mean, it's we've been given.
Yeah,
it's
everywhere.
Kind of, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. I bet you it'll come into play in the next book.
100%. Yeah.
Which have we talked about?
Onyx Storm. We sure did last episode.
Oh, that's right. We did
about okay. Iron Flame.
Yeah.
So. He kind of explains the runes and how the siphon works. And then he's like, this keeps you from being a threat if you were to lose your temper. And she's like, I am not a threat. And he responds with, what you want to be doesn't change what you are without work. You never learned how to start small like the rest of your squad and then move to the bigger, harder strikes. You have to master the basics you were never taught. Small, precise strikes, small strands of your power instead of whatever in Dune's name that was.
Yeah, that part made me laugh because I could just see a coach or a teacher and you're like, whatever that mess is.
It's like, okay, I don't remember the It's not, I don't remember the name of the movie, but there was this movie in the 90s about this kid who like hurts his shoulder and then gets surgery on it. And then he goes to a baseball game and then he has like this incredible arm.
Yes.
And somehow he gets drafted onto a major league team.
The rookie.
Something along those lines. You're going to Google it because it's going to bug you if you don't know.
Because I watched
but
this.
But I feel like it's that. Like, she starts out as a star, like, first draft pitcher, but doesn't know how to, like, bunt. Like, very basic fundamental things. Like,
yeah.
And that's just the analogy that came into my head.
They have no finesse. They're just None. They're just brute force. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's close. It's Rookie of the Year.
Ah, Rookie of the Year. Very nice. Very yes. nice. Interesting movie. Don't judge the special effects. It was made in the 90s.
I thought it was such a good movie. I liked it.
Have you watched it since you were a child?
I want to say relatively recently. It's definitely... It's not Angels in the Outfield.
Okay. You cannot come for Angels in the Outfield.
Oh, I love Angels in the Outfield, but don't... Like, they're all in the same category.
Oh, it's The Sandlot, Angels in the Outfield.
Oh, No. Sandlot is in its only... Don't you dare put it in that group.
The group of... The baseball movies made in the 90s?
Okay, that's fine. But I thought you were like, I'm talking
feel like...
I
playing New York Times like categories right now. Like
no. But I would have put them in like mediocre. Sandlot is amazing.
You're going to say that Angels in the Outfield right now is a mediocre?
Yes. Especially compared to Sandlot. Why are you making this face? What do you mean no?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
I'm sorry. I have a very big passionate love of my 90s baseball movies.
So do I.
You don't get to call it mediocre.
It was mediocre.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, fine. It wasn't mediocre, but it's not better than The Sandlot.
They're different movies.
Just, no. Sandlot's better.
Anyways, we have gone on quite a little tangent about 90s baseball movies. Let's move on to what we're actually talking about,
yeah,
which is Fourth Wing, Iron Flame. One of those. So after Violet gets her conduit, she initiates her really stupid plan that mm-hmm. we left off on. At the end of the last episode, which is heading to Corden to hang out with Viscount Takaris with Mira and Brennan.
Yeah.
It's a pretty long flight. They get there. They're met with some Griffin riders. It's tense, to say the least. They pass, like, the truth inspection situation thing. And then, like... Parting of the sea happens with the Flyers, and guess who beat them there? Zayden.
She's in big trouble.
I would be equally mad.
Oh, I'd be pissed like, too. He's rightfully mad.
So rightfully mad. She's mad at Tarn for telling Sagale. He's like, I said I wouldn't say anything. I never said she wouldn't like figure it out.
Yeah. But in the Mira and Brennan are like also in on this little bullshit trip.
Oh, I have words for Brennan here in a minute.
Okay.
Brennan's pissing me off. Brennan pisses me off.
He's not doing the best job as Big Brother right now.
No, I feel like he needs to have a few more bones broken. So that brings us to chapter 41 and an important little snippet to read. So it says, having refused every proposal from the Isle Kingdoms, Queen Maria, I probably mispronounced that. I'm not an audiobook reader. Sorry, everyone. has named her distant cousin, Viscount Dakaris of Cordon as her heir. As the Viscount is living in his fifth decade and has no direct heirs of his own, the decision has not been a popular one. And this is from The Aristocracy of Poor Emile by Pearson Keto. So, essentially, not only is he a Viscount, he's next in line for the Poor Emile throne. So this dude has a significant amount of power.
Yes.
This is who we went to go hang out with.
Seems like a great idea. No plan. Great idea.
Against advice of the one and only person who's actually had significant amount of dealings with him. Anyways, so unsurprisingly, Zayden is really annoyed with her.
Yeah.
And pretty much tells her so. And they get escorted into the palace. She spends a lot of time being amazed that they grow grass for fun. And I'm like, yeah, this is what happens when your entire life, your entire country isn't constantly at war.
Yeah.
You have time to like grow ornamental grass.
Ornamental grass.
Yeah. John Green will hate that, but, you know, when you're rich and have nothing better to do.
There you go.
So, yeah, she's spending a lot of time narrating about the palace, which, frankly, I don't care. But she's making notes of things like, so, of course, we learn that Cataronia, Zayden's ex-girlfriend, is, like, the heir apparent for Viscount Dakaris. I'm like, of course she is.
Yep.
And she keeps saying these things, being like, oh, like there's these statements of like familiarity that both Zayden and Kat keep saying. And it takes her like a page and a half to put together that he would come here a lot when he was seeing her.
This was infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
Reading this, I remember you and I talking about this. I was like, we figured this out so long ago, and it's just like, girl,
where's the intuition? So she and Zayden are mentally arguing with something, and he says something interesting. He says, Dakaris might want to keep you, but every other flyer in this palace will happily slit your throat and Mira's in name of revenge against your mother. Brennan's amenity is all that saves him here. You have no idea how much danger you're in, the lengths I've gone to in order to keep you safe.
Did you say father or mother?
Mother.
Okay. I thought you said father for a second.
Mm-mm. He's gone to great lengths to keep her safe, though. Which might be a little foreshadowing of the shit he's willing to do for Violet.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen what he's willing to do for other people's children.
Correct. Like, why does she not understand that for the people he cares about, he will do anything. He will take a bullet for these people to protect them. So she's like, well, you didn't act like this like during threshing and the gauntlet last year. He's like, well, I wasn't fucking in love with you then.
Yeah.
It changes things.
She's an idiot. That shouldn't need to be said.
It shouldn't. But we get a nice reiteration of it. So they continue to have this argument. And she's like, this was the only reasonable thing after I failed at, you know, doing the ward thing. He's like, you tried once.
Yeah.
This does not, no. And I agree with Zayden.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, reasonable for looking for another way before serving you up to Dakaris. Let's get one thing straight. If I ever see a way to keep you safe, I'll take it.
Yep.
Sometimes maybe to the detriment of himself.
Again, we see lots of evidence that he will do that.
Sure shit will. So they change, the Mira and Violet are forced to like change into fancy dresses to go down to dinner. And so they do. And they go down, and on their way down to dinner, this girl Zara and Kat are escorting them down. And the further, like the closer and closer they get to the dinner room, the more and more jealous Violet is feeling about Kat and Zayden's previous relationship. Until she walks in, Zayden makes a beeline for her, kind of engulfs her in like shadowy stuff, and then all of the feelings of emotion go away, or feelings of jealousy go away. And we learn that Kat has this ability to manipulate people's emotions, and she's very good at it.
Oh, goodness.
Like, the recipe for a mean girl.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like,
the Regina Georges of the world could never. They would be, like, salivating to have such power.
But also, how would you ever trust yourself around that kind of person?
Oh, never.
Exactly.
I couldn't think somebody I would want to have in power less.
Yeah.
Because, or like near leadership in any manner whatsoever. She's not someone to be trusted.
No. Nope.
Because you can never trust yourself around her.
No.
So they, in before dinner is served, Violet is asked to show off her signet, the reason why she's here. So Takaris has built this huge like arena out of stone from a very specific place and sends her down to hit this target, and it's like a big wardrobe type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she and Mira go down there. Zayden's not has not been allowed to go. And she's in her like pretty flowy dress, and she's watching these two servants bring this thing out. And then she notices one pulls out a key to unlock the thing. She's like, what the fuck? And he unlocks it, and out pops a Venon. Let's just say she was not emotionally prepared for that.
No.
Because she already can't aim.
No.
For shit.
Yeah. Just got to point it out to her very fucking clearly that you actually don't know anything
about your segment.
Yeah.
And Merry Christmas. Here's a Venon.
Mm-hmm. I'd be a nervous wreck.
I would be pooping my pants a little bit.
Yep.
I would be uncomfy with the situation. You're like, really? I, however, would have learned to aim, so I would have been okay.
But yeah, definitely. I'm with you.
I would have probably killed the Venon and then immediately, like, electrocuted the crap out of Takaris. Like, intentionally not killed him, just had the electrical currents go through his body. But I would have made him feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what the fuck was that shit? Not cool, my dude.
Not cool.
Not cool. So that brings us to chapter 42. And another great snippet. I don't read all the snippet, guys. Just the good ones. Why are you laughing at me?
I'm not laughing.
You're smiling. So this one says, though her extraordinary signet allows her to extend the wards around herself and her dragon, Cadet Sorengale lacks the consistent ability to produce her own wards without extreme emotional distress. I'm sorry to report, I doubt this ability will develop in time. I had such hopes for her. And this is a memorandum from Professor Carr to General Sorengale. I have questions.
I probably won't have answers.
just discuss these questions with me.
All right, let's discuss.
Number one, why do you think producing her own wards causes Mira such emotional distress? Because that's who they're talking about. They're talking about Mira.
I don't think it's that way. I think it's the other way around. Like, the emotional distress causes the ward. That's the only way she can bring it up.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm thinking too, is that to protect herself in that way, she has to go to a very traumatic thing in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good thing to make her do at all. But I think we're going to learn, spending more time in Erasia, that maybe Signets don't have to be that tightly connected to your emotions. So maybe there is a way for Mira to learn to do that and not have to go down the path of that emotional trauma.
See, I didn't take it that way. I didn't take it that way at all. Like, just that's just her way. It's like it's an instinct that the only way to get it to trigger is to cause her emotional distress, whatever that may be.
Maybe.
That's how I took it.
But I still don't think that is necessarily the best solution.
No. I mean, like, it definitely, they were observing her for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it may not be the case. So
I'm interested to see if Mira learns more about her own Signet, if they all learn more about their own Signets, spending more time in Erasia. Another piece of information in here I want to point out is this second to last line where it says, "I'm sorry to report, I doubt this ability will develop in time."
Okay.
In time for what?
I took that as over time.
But that's not what it says. It says in time.
I guess that's true. I didn't think about that. I don't know.
In time, is it the longest night? Remember that little snippet we got from Varish? Or from the sage, the evil sage? Sorry, not Varish.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
are they collecting Signets to be able to try to counteract whatever this longest night is?
I don't know.
And maybe Mira. I don't know.
I just think that they would think that she was obviously there's a bigger reason, but I think like it could be written off as like she's like a weapon, really.
She's the opposite of a weapon. She is the healer in the group, almost. Like, I know you don't do like D&D or WoW, but like you always have somebody in the group who's like a wizard and like can cast spells and do shit, that they're not the person who goes in and like hacks and slashes.
Yeah, but like, she's not
actually doing the combat. Not saying that she's incapable by any means, but yeah. Don't mind me while I make random D&D references.
Yeah, I'm not following that one.
It's okay. So the fight ensues and Violet has a little PTSD flashback to Resin. It's not great. It takes Mira like and Taryn like shaking the shit out of her to get her to get her shit together. But like, I feel like this is a pretty like understandable and expected trauma response. Like,
yeah,
the last time she faced a Venon, two people died.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but also it's
really unhelpful right now.
Yeah. 1000%. Like, this in the time to freak out, like, you can't. She went into freeze mode.
Yeah. Fight, flight, or freeze.
Yep.
She froze. I'm so sorry. My dog is barking at nothing. Just out the window and nothing. She's cute, at least.
She's cute.
Her brain is smooth. It has no wrinkles. So none of the thoughts can stick to it. So yeah, the fight ensues. Mira chucks a dagger at the Venon. It sticks in his shoulder, and Violet's like, "Well, shit! Now it has a dagger."
Oh my god.
Well, shit. And so the fight is going not well.
No.
For them, she like thinks to Zayden. She's like, "I need daggers," and he like tosses some down to her, and they like land like 5 feet behind them, and they dive for them, and like her dress gets tied up in it. Like it's a whole mess. Like she wore a terrible choice of clothing to fight a Venon. She should have maybe thought that yeah. Takaris might do something shady. So the fight's not going great, and she gets the daggers, but it's a mess. And then suddenly Brennan is there, and he like essentially forces Mira to create a shield. But we already know that since she's beyond the wards, it's very difficult for her to use her signet. But she is able to successfully create like a little bubble around Brennan and Violet when the Venon pulls from the earth and kills all of the grass and everything. So, you know, Brennan, Mira collapses, like she passes out because she
expended like, a bunch of energy. Yeah,
she tried real hard.
Right.
They did not die. And then it's raining, conveniently enough. And so Violet waits until Brennan gets himself and Mira to the stone steps, and then she essentially electrifies the entire field.
Yeah.
To kill the Venon. Because she can't, like, just hit it. Because she has no aim. She does successfully murder fuck it, though. And then she goes back up, and Zayden is really unhappy with the current course of events.
I think with everyone right now.
I think he's just generally pretty unsatisfied.
Yeah.
He would be doing like the unhappy face on the rating of the world right now. So when they get up there, they get through the crowd, and like the dragons come in around them and they're like threatening everyone, and then Zayden's over there using his shadow magic to choke Takaris out. Because he's really mad, because he's pretty confident that Violet's gonna like maybe not live. And so she like gets into his mind, calms him down, gets him to let Takaris down for the sheer fact of he can't answer questions if he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Which, fair, you can't answer questions if you're dead.
Yeah.
Can they, Violet? And so Zayden's pissy. Mm-hmm. And like, this is the first time I feel like you see Zayden pull like blood rank. Because you remember, he's the Duke of fucking Erasia. Like, he technically outranks a Viscount. He does.
Who the hell? Why do you know that? What? What? Where did that bit of knowledge get dropped? Was that in the book? Did I miss that?
No. You just have to know things about, like, British aristocracy. Or watch a lot of Bridgerton.
I watched all of Bridgerton. No, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. No, I was thinking Downton. I did not watch all of Bridgerton.
So the Bridgerton Anthony,
okay,
is a Viscount. And then Daphne marries the Duke. The Duke outranks the Viscount.
Okay.
Dukes outrank Viscounts. So this is the first time you really see him, because he like forces Takaris to apologize to Violet. And she's like, "It's okay." And he's like, "Nope." And it's interesting to see that like in certain situations, he is willing to go there. Like, he is willing to pull that rank. Because even at one point, he says it to Brennan. He's like, "I outrank you in every way but one." And Brennan's like, "Well, it's the only one that matters, because Brennan's a lieutenant colonel and Zayden's just a lieutenant.
Gotcha.
So at least that one you know.
Yeah, no, that one, yeah, I get that one.
That one you know. I don't have to explain that one.
No.
Just the Regency era stuff.
It's such a random piece of knowledge, I guess. I guess you know, it isn't, considering like that you have consumed that content, but like, yeah.
It's useful.
Okay? It's not something I would have that would have stuck with me, even if I did read it or watch it.
My brain has little nuggets for random facts like that. So they now, because Violet did her part, she hit her target, she took out the Venon, they now open lines of negotiation with Takaris. And so Takaris's first thing is essentially like, here's my offer. You become my personal bodyguard for a few years, and then I'll ship you and all of your favorite people off to this island that won't accept you. But you can have peace there. And she's like, it's tempting for like half a second until I remember all the reasons that makes no sense. I'm like, thank you, Violet. Thank you for using your brain finally. I appreciate it.
At least she did.
And then this is an interesting piece. So then it shifts to Brennan, who is he's the one who's there to like sort of negotiate for the Illuminari more so than everyone else, because he outranks everyone. And they're asking about how come all of the cadets could leave. And Brennan's response is, dragons owe you no explanation. And my sister just earned the Luminary, or are you going to go back on your deal? I have one problem with this line.
What?
Literally in the previous chapter, no one knew who Brennan was. Really was. No one knew he was really a Soren Gale. So he's out here claiming Violet as his sister.
Oh, shit.
When no one's supposed to know they're related.
God, that slipped right by me.
Now my question is, was that intentional?
Probably.
Or did somebody fuck up?
No, I think that was intentional.
Brennan fucked up. And in my humble opinion, gotten himself killed over it.
What do you mean?
I think there's a very serious possibility that Brennan dies in the next book.
Why do you say that?
So you know how in Harry Potter, first he loses Sirius.
Yeah.
And then he loses Dumbledore. And then he has to kind of go it alone. I think it similarly is going to happen to Violet. So Violet loses an important person who's close to her, who's an authority figure in this book. I think it's going to happen again. I think she's going to lose another important person to her who is also an authority figure. Who fits that bill? Brennan.
I mean, maybe it's possible. That's not where my brain went.
I wouldn't be entirely surprised if he dies at some point for realsies.
Yeah, I think he did it on purpose.
It's interesting.
He went to great lengths
to
hide his identity and keep himself dead. And I'm sorry. Like, I just, it feels off.
It feels sketchy.
It was intentional. He was too careful to make that careless of a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Like, why are you out here claiming your sister?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When no one is supposed to know who you are.
He's up to no good.
Something's happening. Something's happening. So Takaris gives them this deal. He will give them the Luminary in exchange for weapons, which, unsurprising, like, poor Emile's under attack from the Venon. Not surprising that he's going to want some weapons. But then he also wants them to take the 100 or so flyers that he has taken in because their, like, cadet school was in Zulia, which has recently fallen to the Venon.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, Brennan agrees to this.
I'm telling you.
Mind you, the Griffins don't do well in altitude. And there's literally one way to get them there. And that's where we're going to leave you today.
I was waiting for you to say that.
And that is where we're going to leave you today, is with that lovely revelation.
We'll see what happens.
Thoughts on this little piece of the book?
It made me very suspicious of Brennan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brennan.
Very suspicious.
I'm like, what's going on with Brennan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Made me continue to be annoyed with Violet.
Yeah, nothing's new there.
She doesn't listen to at some point, Zayden has got to get annoyed with her. The fact that she literally never listens to him.
Yeah. She deserves it.
Oh, yeah. Like,
I'd be fucking livid if I was him.
Oh, my God. Right.
How
would she feel
just once
if he literally never listened to her?
Yeah, just once. Do what I ask you, please.
And like the fact that like she essentially made him apologize because like when they were having the argument when she was like going in to like get changed for dinner, she told him he was acting like Dane because he was like being protective of her. And I'm like, he is not being anything like Dane. Dane consistently tried to get you out of the quadrant. He was trying to get you to do dishonorable things.
Mm-hmm.
Zayden, on the other hand, is intentionally trying to keep you from putting yourself into more danger than you could possibly imagine.
Yeah. All because you
he
won't
knows
listen.
These people.
Yeah. And she didn't ask him a fucking thing. Maybe if she had bothered to ask Zayden about Kat, she would have known.
Like, I get not wanting to, like, have the ex's conversation. Totally fine. However, how about when he continues to insist that it is a non-negotiable for her to go to hang out to do what Takaris wants, why is she not asking, why do you feel so strongly about this?
Yeah.
What is it about Takaris? And she does a little bit, and he's like, he likes to collect people and be like, I need you to expand on that.
Yeah.
What do you mean by
that?
What does that mean? What do you know about him that would be useful in this decision-making process that maybe you should share with me so I have a better understanding of why you are so adamantly against this?
Yeah. Why are you pushing this so hard? Why do you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all she had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
And yes, her plan ultimately works out because they get the Luminary, but there's been a lot of consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Potentially.
Like, and imagine what it could have been had she waited and learned to fucking strike and just... What then?
Yeah.
So. But no. No. I have to do it the hard way.
She's brash.
Mm-hmm.
She's so... She just rushes in with no thoughts.
Yeah. It's annoying. She should be smarter than that.
That's the character I liked in Fourth Wing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who thought ahead.
Yeah.
But she doesn't... That's not... that Violet's not in the room.
No. No, no.
Nope. Anyways, well, thank you all so much for listening. If you want to check out what is coming up next on the pod, be sure to give us a follow over on Instagram. It's Mel and Jill Geek Out. Or if you want to give us a suggestion of what you want to geek out about next, shoot us an email over at jillandmelgeekout@gmail.com. Once again, my name is Melissa.
And I'm Jill.
And this has been Mel and Jill Geek Out. Bye, guys.
Bye.